CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, all right. There's a little sting to make you feel good this morning. Mad About You. Love that song. I know. I think it's the guitar or it's the whole thing. It's just beautiful. All righty. What's happening? Reconnecting on a Monday after I was overseas for what? 10 days? It doesn't feel like it, though, because I actually only missed one day of work. There was only one day I wasn't on the show with you. That was Thursday. Yeah, I think I was here for the rest, at least for a little bit of each show. So, what can I tell you? It was a spectacular trip. There was the Global Media Forum part of it was fantastic. It was terrific to kind of see people from all over the world coming together to talk about the stuff that we care about in this business and how to reach audiences and make a difference and how digital has changed the world and how it continues to change the world. The whole aspect of freedom of speech came up quite a lot. And I met really cool people there too. But man, Ben, maybe you can help me with this. I figured somewhere around 15 to 20 kilometers every day.
That's European travel.
Yeah.
You do lots of walking. It's
okay,
amazing.
So how come I didn't lose weight? Because I went to the gym yesterday to weigh myself after I'd done a little bit of different exercise, you know, weights and stuff. And I got on the scale and it said I was only 1 kilogram lighter than when I left. How is that possible when I walked 15 to 20 kilometers a day and they assure me that that's a kind of cardio that will get rid of fat?
Gareth, this whole thing about losing weight is very difficult because you never know what your muscle percentage is. You never know what your fat percentage really is. Some people will lose like 5 kilograms, something like that. Someone like you, maybe 8 kilograms. But also it depends how much sausage you were having.
No, well, I didn't skimp, but I didn't eat horrible food. I did have pizza on 2 days. I'm not going to beat myself up about that.
Oh, come on, Gareth.
Yeah.
You were on holiday.
Right, exactly.
Like, come on.
But
the beer.
I don't think I overdid it. No, not even with beer. I mean, I don't drink a lot of beer, and I didn't drink a lot of beer there.
But this is when you're meant to indulge, though. This is the time to do so before you get back to the real world.
Oh, well, that's what I thought. But I was so annoyed. I really thought I'd get on the old scale and it would show me something I wanted to see,
mm-hmm.
You know, like 5 kilograms down or something impressive. No such luck. All a disaster. Same as I was when I left. Very annoying. So this whole cardio thing's totally overrated.
It could just be for you. Yeah, that's the thing.
It might just not be my thing. So, what happened? Yeah,
because isn't it the perks of also being on holiday, you aren't in the real world, so you just wake up and you go to breakfast, and you sightsee and you go to lunch, and you sightsee some more, and you happen to sightsee the bottom of your glass many times over.
Well, what happens, I mean, certainly on this trip, it wasn't like a major drinking trip. There was the one night I went out and had tequilas with Hi Rob, and then the other night in Amsterdam with Stefan, but otherwise nothing. Mostly very, very chilled. The point is also that you're busy all the time, so you're nonstop going. And I managed to make it into the gym on the Sunday and the Monday.
Oh, wow.
No, sorry, what was it? It was the Friday and the Saturday in Berlin, the first 2 days.
You know, and from all the footage you were posting up, it seems very like, I don't want to use the word vibrant, but it seems like there were a lot of people just having a lot of recreational fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's the summer. It's the full heat of summer over there right now. So they're all outside.
That explains it.
You know, the Germans, as I said to you, that very few people wearing a lot of clothing in Holland, which is nice. Mubs, you would love Holland. It's your kind of place.
Okay.
I can just now picture Mabali like streaking through a town
square. Oh, hell no. No, 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 no,
with a t-shirt in one hand and a beer jug.
No, no, no.
With a jets blowing
in the wind. No, not a chance. Not a chance in hell.
Titties blowing in the wind.
Really?
I can see it.
I think
she is right.
Like
no,
four beers.
No. I assume you're referring to the fact that I'd be able to get high every day.
No, then
also that there are a lot of topless men obviously walking
around.
But
it's just a very carefree place. Like, there's not a lot of stress there. I get the idea that people who live there are having a very happy time. There are homeless people. I didn't see many of those in Berlin, But I saw a lot of those in Frankfurt, and I saw a lot of those in Holland, in Amsterdam.
Actual homeless or just kind of more alternatively dressed?
No, real homeless people. Like they living on the street. And you know, the funny thing about homeless people, I asked this question at the time. I still haven't got a good enough answer for it. Because I don't mean to be disparaging about homeless people. We don't know how they ended up there. Mm-hmm. You don't know what happened to have got them in that position. It might be a hell of a story. You know, there, but for the grace of God goes you.
Well, that's what we learn from the CEO sleep out every year, is that the homeless thing, it's like three steps to it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Now, does mental illness come before homelessness, or does homelessness lead to mental illness? Because a lot of these people are crazy. They're on the street and they're deranged. You know, they lie there and they're talking to themselves. The one guy in Frankfurt was lying in the most uncomfortable position I've ever seen anyone lie in, on the pavement. And it was warm. It was warm. I can only imagine what that poor guy has to do in the winter to keep warm.
Oh, man.
You know? And I just thought, I wonder if crazy comes before homeless and leads to homelessness, or if homelessness eventually leads to craziness.
Yeah, I'd go with the latter because you're so down and out and you've only got your own thoughts and that kind of stuff.
I think you may have a point. I don't know. To me, the two are definitely linked. I'm just trying to find out chicken before the egg or egg before the chicken.
Well, I think it's plausible that it's a case of both. I mean, some people who have mental illness eventually end up not, you know, being pushed out of their family or, you know, and they end up being homeless.
Correct.
As a result.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
So it could very well be a case
stuck
of both.
Yeah, I don't know how it works. And there were a few of those. So don't, when you think about the sort of first world economies, imagine that there aren't poor people. There are a lot of poor people. And I thought, looking around at some of these buildings in Germany, would I want to live here compared to my life in South Africa? Because we complain about our country and we complain about our government, and there is lots to complain about. Mm. I'm by no means as patriotic as I once was. But I think we have a pretty good life. Even those of us who are struggling in South Africa. Because I think if you're struggling in a place like that, it's really unpleasant. Especially in the winter. And I think especially because people are not, you know, in our society we have more charities. We have more charities in South Africa than there are in America. Did you know that?
There are more charities
there
in
are more
South Africa.
Registered charity organizations in South Africa than there are in the United States.
That would make sense.
And their population is 10 times ours. For every one South African, there's at least 10 Americans. So that's pretty scary. But there are things about living in South Africa that make it a little bit, like the climate and the fact that there are, you know, there are people who have access to soup kitchens and all kinds of things. I'm not saying in Europe they don't. Mm. But I looked at how middle-class people in Europe live. And if you live in a little tiny, tiny, tiny apartment in, say, Berlin or Frankfurt, and you live right on the street and it's noisy and you're in a city, full-on massive. It's like being in the CBD of Johannesburg, except at night there are cars. Because in the CBD of Johannesburg at night there aren't cars. It's mostly quiet. It's a different way of living. There's no such thing as gardens. You don't have a balcony necessarily. You just have a window out into the street. Here in South Africa, we do have a little bit of space. And we take that space for granted. We're not living on top of each other everywhere. Obviously, there are places where the concentration of population is very high. But I wouldn't want to live there.
Do you think they're more hopeful
of
there as opposed to us?
I think Germans are mostly pessimistic.
Okay, we have it good then.
And they do, listen, I've met different Germans. There are a lot of Germans who aren't pessimistic. But I think most of them are, they're not convinced that things are going to be better tomorrow than they were today. And that's interesting because a lot of times in this country, we beat ourselves up about that. And we give ourselves a hard time and we go, oh, we're so behind the rest of the world. Not really. It's more or less the same now, anywhere you go.
Don't you also know a couple of South Africans who tried to make a life for themselves outside of the country and have since come back?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's proven to be so difficult.
Definitely. And I think the worst for those people is that they feel like they have to swallow their pride, that people are going to judge them, all of that stuff. And nobody really cares. You must just go wherever you want to go. Look, the fact of being alive in this day and age is that you are allowed to go wherever you want, do whatever you want, and settle wherever you like. And nobody really should have any say about that except you. Mm-hmm. Huh? Why are people worried about what other people think? Why do you care about that? If you would be happier in Australia or in France or in Brazil, go to France, Australia, Brazil. Nobody's going to go to you, oh, well, you're not very patriotic. I used to feel that way about stuff. Now when I meet people who've moved around, migration is a part of the human story. No one's always, nobody comes from where they say they come from. You trace them back far enough, they come from somewhere else.
Exactly. People are being so precious about nationality nowadays. It's like a Cold War thing almost.
Yeah.
Like this, no one cares what you, it's not like it's an achievement. Oh, well done. You were so good at something that you're therefore this nationality.
I mean, your parents just made you there. That's all.
It's like being a black belt in karate. You don't boast about it.
Yeah. So I don't understand this whole need for people to, and then people claim, oh no, this is my land. I'm going to fight for this land. I'll go to war for this country. I'll put on a military uniform and fight for this president or this king or this priest. It's kind of stupid. Because if you follow your family back over 500, 600, 1,000 years, you'll see you don't even come from there. Nobody comes from the place they're in right now. You just happen to be standing here at this moment in time.
And then to just extend that further, I don't think right now I have anything that I'd really fight for.
No, hell no. If imagine, I've often said
you would fight for Oprah.
Well, hey, that's an exception.
Oprah gave you a shield and a sword.
I've often thought about this.
But something so emphatic.
If Gedleti Gisa said to you now, we're going to go and fight in the Congo for something, you would say to him, I'm sorry, I'm not interested, right?
No.
You would tell him to get effed.
I don't think, you know, if we were fighting for male rights or black rights.
Hell no.
Hell no. Does that make me selfish?
It does, it's true. I mean, Mubs, you wouldn't put on a uniform and start fighting
I'm not fighting for anyone.
No, exactly.
Yeah, we fight for ourselves every single day. They're called bills and they're called reality. I tell you what, we're on the front lines every...
If they wanted to, like, you know, cut down the hours they sell booze, now that I'd fight for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I missed Friday's show. What was the secret sex thing you were talking about earlier?
Fascinating.
I need to be updated on this. I know there's a podlet, but
there's a podlet. So yeah, but it's basically from a Sex and the City episode, and we start talking about secret sex and how you shouldn't feel ashamed if someone's secret sexing you.
What does that mean?
So what's define the term?
First, what is it? Yeah.
Sex, okay, so if you're having sex with someone, but it's just sex, and you don't take them to places where people will see you in public, so you don't introduce them to your friends.
So you're embarrassed about.
So you're kind of embarrassed by them. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends. It's not always a case of being embarrassed, like.
It's like you don't want anyone to know that you're having sex with a certain
person. I'm secret sexing someone that I'm not supposed to have sex with because other people will get upset. So there's instances like that.
Yeah, okay.
So we're not allowed to be public about it because then other people are going to get upset. No, it's not a case of cheating. It's just...
Yeah, it's just there will be confusion and complication outside of that. Or if you don't live on the East Rand and you're secret sexing a cousin, also you keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think. Yeah, you know.
And this is happening a lot.
You should tell a therapist.
Well, we were talking about how it's happened at least at one point in your life because you were either secret sexing someone or you were the person being secret sexed by someone else.
Yeah. And that's where the spinner comes in there. Have you ever been secret sexed? Everyone believes like, oh, no, of course not. Everyone would be glad to be having sex with me.
You might be someone's secret sex partner. Yeah. That's hysterical. And you think, oh, well, we're just keeping it on the DL. Meanwhile, they're embarrassed about you.
if I really count, I've secret sexed two people, and I've been secret sexed before.
Wow.
But I don't mind it because, like, for you, it's like a little score. It's like, oh, okay. I just like, you know,
would it bother you
went up the ranks.
Would it bother you if you found out that you were being secret sexed?
No,
like, you were the object.
I guess it depends on the context of this person. Like, if it's someone who you really think is going to be a long-term relationship and they're actually secret sexing you, not so great.
Yeah.
If you're, like, neither here nor there about them, it's like, oh, what a relief. They're only secret sexing. I don't actually have to follow through with this.
You see, then we took it a step further because Mabal has actually had the conversation with someone they secret sexing, like, yo...
This know is your the place. Understanding.
All right, so you lay down the ground rules.
Well, we both laid down the ground rules.
But there weren't any extraneous relationships, so it's not like either of you were cheating.
No.
But it was going to be a keep this on the DL situation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the way to go, though.
Yeah. Sia, have you ever had like a straight guy secret sex you?
You see, that for me is the line that I've never
gone there.
To cross.
Because I would imagine that would be a reason for secret sex too.
And I think maybe that was like a bad experience that I had because I was once with the bi guy.
Mm.
And then he's like, oh, you know, if only, you know, I could just have you and not my girlfriend. Then I was like, no, wait, what's happening? You have a girlfriend and then you think just because now you're bi, you can have both of us. So
don't do me any favors.
Yeah, ever since then, I was just like, ain't nobody got time for that. Because also, you see, this is my rule. And you see, if I actually had the time to, you know, become a therapist or a psychologist and understand things. But I swear, when you see someone's ecstasy face, the rules just completely change. Like, nothing will ever be the same.
Their O face.
Their O face.
Yes. No. I don't know why people feel like they need to confide or they feel like they need to just say something.
And people often say, I love you at that moment too, which is never a good idea.
For
that.
It's the hormones.
Because and then afterwards there's cuddling and crap, which you don't need, you know?
And then the woman thinks, oh, this means that he definitely loves me. Exactly. And he's thinking, gosh, how soon can I get out of this bed?
This guy, and I think to him in the moment, he thought this was the best thing to say. He looks straight into my eyes and I'm like, okay, what's happening? And he says, I shit you not, he says,
oh my God,
if only you just had a womb, then I'd really marry you.
Oh my gosh. No! No! All right, well, can I play something for you?
Excuse me.
This is quite funny. There's this, I don't know if I showed you this British girl who gives some rules about sex. This might be interesting to you. I don't want to move on from that too soon. We can always pick it up later, but listen to this. Sia has a womb. Poor Sia. I mean, what a horrible thing to have. What did you say? Did you just burst out laughing?
No, that was for me just so bizarre. And I was like, I'm sure I'm being punked. So I'm being pranked. Let's just get up now, get dressed and leave.
All right. This is a very, very crass English woman. She's not, don't expect any, this is not for the kids. This is really the kind of thing that you need to listen to once or twice because when you hear it the first time, you can't believe what you're hearing. So she's an English girl. She must be in her 20s and she's giving some tips to men about sex. She's crass as all hell. She has a mouth like a garbage pail.
Get your notepads out.
But there may be some useful information in this, all right?
I've been asked what annoys me most about sex. Now, there's a lot. But I've managed to sum it up to my top 5 most annoying things that you can do during or after sex. Right. And I ain't going to fuck about. I'm going to go straight in there with number 5, which is when you moan at me constantly and start talking. I'm already doing my bit for charity by even fucking you right now. Stop talking to me. Stop. I ain't Jeremy Kyle. Don't want to fucking hear it. I don't need you asking me if it feels nice, because if it feels nice, you'll know that it feels nice. And if you ain't sure if I think it feels nice or not, it don't. Moving on to 4. Everybody knows that I don't like pubes, all right? So it's there. The main reason I don't like pubes is because I'm a fucking goer when it comes to giving oral. Yeah? And if you imagine your lips are about to touch bollock, and then you get a mouth full of wiry, cunty, fucking loose pubes. Fuck off, mate. Fuck off. It pisses me right off. Like, some of you lads don't even trim them down. There's just a fucking Amazon down there. And that turns me into a desert, you know what I mean? Dried straight away, not having it. I ain't having it. Number 3 is when he's got a proper good rhythm going, he's about to come, and he asks you where. Why would I care when you're already there? Come in my hair. I don't mind, mate. Come wherever. If you've already been fucking me bareback, why would I mind where you're about to come? Yeah. Fucking hell, take some responsibility of your own ejaculation. Moving on to number 2, and it's got to be when he's just bust his fucking nut up you and he asks you, are you on any contraception? Well, it's a bit fucking late now, isn't it, cunt? Why the fuck would you ask me after? Why ask me after? Is it going to make a difference? Your little Tom Daly's are having a laugh up by my ovaries right now, having a good old Tom swim about. Daly. So it's a little bit irrelevant now, isn't it? Fuck about. Luckily, yes, I am on contraception because I take responsibility. Unlike you. Don't start trying to act like you're being responsible after. In at number one has got to be when he tries to get to that bathroom before you've done the cum run. No, mate, that ain't happening, is it? What on earth possesses you to think that you deserve that bathroom before me? The fucking spunk bucket that's just sat here cradling your babies. Get them out of me now and get me to the bath. I will long jump over a cunt and dart off to that bathroom quicker than Mo Farah to ensure I can get these cunts out of me. Rocky, ASAP. Just have a bit of consideration, do you know what I mean? You've just been pounding the girl. You sit there and have a fucking breather while she goes and empties the fucking cunts out of her.
How do you like that?
Ooh, she is.
She's
direct.
Rough, huh?
She is direct. Rough.
Listen, we need to all be having these conversations just like, well, tell it
I
like
mean,
it is.
You know, she doesn't necessarily use beautiful language, but yeah. She gets the point across.
She does show the diversity of English, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and every word is completely transferable into others. Yeah, some are verbs and nouns and adjectives.
And there is a great handle of English language right there.
Amazing. So there we are. There's someone who you need to listen to when it comes to those tips.
Interestingly, there are a couple of studies that I read where they basically rank who is having the most orgasms and who's having the least.
Yeah.
So men obviously have more orgasms than women. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is that lesbians are having more orgasms than straight women.
Wow.
Oh, that would make sense though.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Because they know what they're doing, really. Yeah. When you think about it, like, it's like you're playing at a higher league, you know. It's like test match rugby as opposed to like Curry Cup. Because in Curry Cup, you get a lot of people just trying so hard because they want to impress. But when you know.
That's why I have to speak up for my people. That's why they say gay people, their sexual experience is better because they know what the person likes based on what they enjoy.
Based on having the same.
It's because they got the same kit.
Yeah.
Sia is enjoying his fidget spinner.
Already.
Spinning it around.
At first I was like, no, this is not
for me. He was typing
now
and doing
like,
it just now. It was spinning while he was typing a second ago.
And the gold, my goodness, I'm just like.
All right. The first episode of EastRanders is coming to us just now.
Woohoo!
That's right. Amanda's been interviewing some people on the EastRand, and we'll have our first episode of EastRanders just around the corner. But first, I thought it might be a good idea for us to check in on some of the news.
All right. Well, let's begin with the chairperson of SAA, Dudu Mieni, who apparently is going to be facing the music in Parliament tomorrow as they basically try to fire her from her position.
Yeah.
The chairperson will face a motion to be fired in Parliament following a report that she allegedly lied in an attempt to sabotage the appointment of a desperately needed CEO for SAA.
Isn't it weird how hard people have to work to get rid of someone who doesn't know what they're doing? I mean, SAA are losing money. They're bleeding left, right, and center. It's a disaster. And yet they want to keep her. Someone wants to keep her because she's still there.
Someone with the power to keep her.
I wonder who that could be.
Keeping her there.
Now, I wonder who that could be.
The Democratic Alliance's SA spokesperson, Alf Lees, revealed in a statement yesterday that, you know, firstly, that the SAA has been without a CEO for more than 2 years.
Yeah.
And during this time, according to Lees, the airliner has lost 6.3 billion rand through bad management, particularly by the board of directors and its chairperson.
Do you know how badly you have to manage a place to run into that sort of debt? Just read that number to us again.
6.3 billion rand loss just in 2 years.
Think about if this was a private company.
Jeez.
And the CEO and the management of that company ran it into the ground to the tune of 6 billion rand. What would you think of those people? What would you do if you were a shareholder in that company and the management ran it into the ground to the tune of 6 billion rand? How would you figure that out in your head?
How would you make sense of such a disastrous cock-up? How would that ever make sense to you?
It's not much of a discussion, is it? It's like, how the hell is this all happening?
You would not only have those people fired immediately, but you would also have them locked in jail for thieving and wasting and stealing.
But it's almost treason because they're so bad.
This is our national airline. This should be making money, not losing money. Who flew on SAA in the last 6 years? Put your hands up. Did you pay for a ticket or did they pay you to fly?
I have never been paid to fly.
No. So in other words, they bought you a ticket? No. You bought a ticket that you put money in. How can they be losing money in a business where you pay to fly? Where your ticket covers the cost of the fuel and the staff and the meal and the airport taxes and everything else. How could it possibly be that you could run into debt? And especially when you're one of only three airlines that run in South Africa. Because two companies own two airlines, right? British Airways, Comair owns Kalula, and SAA owns Mango. So there's only one other one, that's Fly Sapphire. It might be little small charter companies, but that's it. So three, it's not like you're in a huge competitive environment where there are 28 airlines. Like in America, you've got Southwest and United and American Airlines, and you've got all these different little airlines that run from state to state. Here, three airlines you have to beat, and you own two of the five that are in existence. How can you lose money? How bad at your job do you have to be?
Man.
Do me a favor. Do me any.
So according to Sunday Papers, they reported that Mieni had allegedly attempted to stop an SAA meeting by misleading the new finance minister, Malusi Gigaba, who was in a process of appointing a new CEO. Mieni had apparently lied to Gigaba, telling him that the board was getting ready to make a decision relating to the long-term turnaround strategy, as well as, you know, discussing who the new CEO should be. After almost stalling the process, the board was able to continue its process, and the board recommended that Vodacom executive Vuyani Jarana become the CEO, but Mieni had allegedly wanted Jerry Vilakazi to be appointed instead and had tried everything to stop the board's process of identifying Jarana.
Why always these turnaround strategies? Why can't someone just run it right from the start? This is not hard. Here's what Dudu Mieni had to do in order to be a successful chairperson. Chairperson is not the CEO, by the way. The chairperson just sits there, runs the meetings of the board every couple of weeks, months, and makes sure that things aren't going horribly out of control. That's all they have to do. They're like the backstop. You employ the best person you can as the CEO. You find someone super smart and you pay them whatever they want to do it. And then they make sure that the planes land, the planes take off, there's fuel in them, the staff are all sorted. They cut out the waste because SAA has become a massive employer of people. A lot of them it doesn't need. And let me tell you, some of those air hostesses could lose some weight.
Oh, okay.
You have to be thin to walk down those corridors. All right? You can't be pushing a trolley if you bump into every other seat. Some things to think about, people. And Dudu Mieni can't even just do that. She can't even just appoint someone who can make her look good. How dumb do you have to be? This is not good for anyone in this country. This is not good for the president appointing his friend, because it looks like the most obvious kind of sheltered employment. It's not good for women, because you know there are men in the sexists in the world who will say, oh, well, it's because she's a woman. It's not good for blacks, because then there are racists who will say, well, look, it's because she's black. It's not good for corporate South Africa, because there are other companies that are able to run their business properly. And they'll say, well, she's incompetent. I don't see how there's an upshot to this. I don't see how this is good. Even if money's been stolen, 6 billion rand's worth of money. Eventually, we're going to have to come after you and lock you up in jail. So that's not worth it either. Why would you run this airline into the ground? And let me be clear about this too. I've flown SAA a lot of times. And I've never, to my mind, except for one day when there was a strike, I've never had a major problem with SAA. Mostly they get it right. So the business side of things can work. It can run properly. The only thing standing in your way is you. Dudu, get out of the way. Let's run this national carrier properly. Let's turn it into a profitable enterprise. Let's make it work and make it something that we can be proud of in South Africa. 6 billion rands of debt is nothing to be proud of. That means you don't know how to run a business. You don't even know how to run a sand pit if you run into 6 billion rands worth of debt on a profit-making enterprise. Insanity. And you could copy and paste everything I've just said into all the other parastatals. Take your pick. All of them have been run. People say, like, because it's a pejorative in South Africa to say it's been run like a spaza shop. But the people who run spaza shops know what they're doing. The people who run spaza shops in South Africa are smart, commercially minded, entrepreneurial people. These people in charge of the state-owned enterprises are not even close. I would rather have someone who runs a spaza shop running SAA. They'd know what to do. They know about supply and demand. This is what we've got. This is not, this, by the way, is not black excellence, Jimmy Manyi. This is the opposite of that. This reinforces the argument of racists and neocons and people who are against transformation. This emboldens their argument, and you're giving it to them on a silver platter. Please don't. You're retarding black economic empowerment with people like Dudu Mieni.
Well, people like that are going to think what they want anyway, regardless of what happens.
I'm afraid. That's absolutely true. What else is going on?
Hey, well, a certain Mr. Claudio Motsoeneng went to church yesterday, and it happened to be Pastor Mboro's church.
Oh, yes.
Where, my goodness,
he's all the rage.
He said quite a few things, including the mere fact that he sees himself as the president of South Africa sometime in the future.
Oh, okay.
You know, this is only logical. Well, and it
listen,
is happening.
You know what?
If we keep sliding downwards, he's got a very good chance.
Hey, so everyone is coming up.
Listen, if Kanye West and Donald Trump can say that they want to be presidents of their countries one day, Claudio Motsoeneng can say he wants to be president in this country, okay?
Sure.
Well, Claudio says, and I quote, "To those who are concerned about Claudio, let me tell you, know that the future looks bright for me. When you pray, pray that I rule the country. You should pray that I become the president of the country, because in me, you're going to see a different country." Oh, yeah. Viva, Claudio, viva.
No, it's halala.
Halala. Halala, my freestata, halala.
I just want to know, at what stage do people just stop and just, like, just sort of, hey, you, get off.
Do you know what
because
I love,
though? Because the guy, like, there's no substance here at all. Is everyone else on the same drugs as this guy?
In him?
There's some Nyope doing the rounds, obviously,
no,
in that.
Just everyone taking it.
In everything that he says, though, there's such great justifications with it, though. He says that he's not particularly eyeing the 2019 elections as he wanted a woman to run the country.
Yeah, of course, we know who that is.
Exactly. And he says the reason why he is under attack is because he is actually one of the prominent South Africans who wants to change the country for better. He says all the people who are changing South Africa are under attack, and he is one of them. So, hey, let's see. Claudi says he's in for better days, though, as well, because he also says people are saying it's the end of Claudi. Actually, it's the beginning of a better journey for Claudi. The future's bright for Claudi. Don't you love how he's referring to himself?
Always
in the third person.
Always.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, this is a test and I am enjoying it. I grew up in the streets. I was starving, but I knew I'm different because God is with me. Of course, throw in God when you're in Pastor Mboro's church.
Bona, so. God is a useful one to throw in every now and again.
Oh, yeah. God,
oh, like, yeah. He comes in handy, that guy.
Imagine being this is why I think there isn't a God, because if there was and you said, if I were God and Claudio Motsoeneng were invoking me, I'd come down with that pillar of sulfur from the Old Testament, man, and I'd say, look, bitch,
shut up,
keep me out of your stupid life if you don't mind. You're like half a reptile. Don't ever talk about me again.
Yeah.
Here, have some fire. Boom. That's what I would do.
Call it a day. Done.
Yes, sis.
But if you ever needed any sort of justification of Claudio's power, he also went on to say, I have prayed for rain when the country was experiencing water shedding.
Uh-huh.
And the following day, the rain poured. I also prayed for the tropical cyclone Dineo, and the storm stopped and did little damage.
What would we do without
Might
the guy?
I suggest that he not look into becoming the next president, but rather look into going into the church.
Yes.
Because he's on that whole preacher tip where he talks about the power of prayer. That would be a better business for him to get into, I think.
Well, I just,
and he already has such a big following. Yeah. He could start his own church and make, you know, money off of that.
Lest we forget, I think the Pastomboro church thing, just stopping by there, is part of a whole, you know, announcing yourself. Burning Clemenza did it.
Yeah, this church has to be shut down. Yeah. This is a very bad church. It's filling a lot of really stupid people's brains with even more mush than they could possibly handle.
Oh, yeah.
This church may be the source of stupidity. It may be the fountain, like the fountain of youth that helps people look young. This is the fountain of dumb. So someone's got to shut this church down, really.
Please don't judge Mr. Motsoeneng on his track record at the SABC.
Don't you dare. Don't judge him on anything except what he says.
And what he's prayed for.
All right.
Yes. Power of prayer.
Supernova says, Gareth, can I nominate you to sit on the SABC board? If you're appointed, would you accept?
Never.
Forget it. And Supernova, if you think about doing it. Yeah, how rude.
Why the hell would you want to sign up for that?
Don't be so rude. Greg said, I would only invest in ETV if that guy who announces the shows still announces the shows.
Tuna! on Friday, X9.
Yeah. Is that still, it's not Nimrod, ne?
I think it is.
Nimrod and Koz.
I think it is him.
Is it?
Yeah. Ben, in certain East Rand towns, says Greg Reed Springs, it's an achievement to sleep with your cousin. Your sister is normal, though, not frowned upon because it's easy and expected to sleep with your sister in Springs.
Yeah, I think that's more forbidden sex than secret sex.
Well, don't you go saying horrible things about the East Rand. It is time for our first episode of East Randers, everybody. Very exciting. This is where we'll find out about the people of the East Rand. It's time. Let's start off with Amanda. Do you want to tell us who this first person is on the East Rand? Hang on, let me just get you on here. Hang on a second.
This Amanda, music of course, is the business.
Amanda lives on the East Rand, so she knows a lot of people there. And the point of this is not to make fun of people in the East Rand. It is to introduce us all to them. There are people in this country and in the world. We have listeners all over the world who don't know what the East Rand is. So, Amanda, go ahead.
Well, these people would like to remain anonymous.
Okay.
They're really cool.
All right.
Done some crazy stuff, and I thought, like, these are the best ones so far.
So we're just looking at some stories from the East Rand.
Yeah, some stories of what happened, why people love the East Rand.
All right, here it is. The first in our series of East Randers. All right, are you ready, people? Let's go.
Okay. Well, as long as you keep me anonymous, I'll tell you a great Vale story. Look, there's 20 fight stories I can tell you, but they're a dime a dozen. So basically, Friday night, get ready, we go down to our local dive bar. The drinks are cheap and the girls are slutty, no other word. And at that particular time, there was a local South African band that had a song on the radio, and they were doing pretty well. And this one particular member of the band decided to come down to the local dive bar, and I'm not going to mention the band or his name, but for the purposes, let's just call him Brittany. And was running his mouth the whole night about how great his band is and how well he's doing and how people should treat him like a king. And obviously guys were getting upset with it. But as the night went on, people of Edenvale, much like this guy's band, kind of flock to a watering hole. So where buffalo and elephants come to the watering hole, the local Edenvale people went to the local bar and drank and smoked and carried on. And Brittany ended up getting so drunk, He slipped and fell and somehow managed to get his head stuck on the side of the toilet, and it ended up taking three guys to pull his head, get his head unstuck from the side of the toilet. But yeah, he was now obviously covered in vomit and whatever else was on the bathroom floor. And yeah, eventually I had enough of this guy, and by the time the end of the night came, most of the people had gone home. Brittany was asleep on the beanbags, and I saw my opportunity, and I gave him a special leaving present called the Arabian goggles. I'm sure you guys know what that is. I'm not going to explain what that is. But yeah, that's my veil story.
Arabian goggles, isn't that where you put your balls in someone's face?
No.
I think it is, yeah.
I'm scared to Urban Dictionary.
I think it is. Is that a true story?
It's a Correct. True story.
Wow. Do we know who the band was, or?
Yes.
Okay. Really well-known band?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on, give me a clue.
An animal with black and white lines.
Zebra and giraffe.
Zebra and giraffe. Oh, wow.
Arabian goggles.
Arabian goggles.
I hope they have a song called Arabian goggles.
Well, there's one of the rough stories from the East Rand, and one of many that we will hear in the next few days. Thank you, Amanda. Amanda is the executive producer of that segment of the show.
I love that the preferred name choice that went with there for
was Brittany.
Was Brittany. I love that so much. That makes me happy.
All right. Hey, are we going to talk to Rich today? Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah, we're going to speak to Rich Mulholland because on a Monday we check in with Rich. That's what we do because he gives us a reality check.
Do you reckon Rich has ever given anybody Arabian goggles before?
I hope not. For Rich's sake and for theirs.
Oh, that is a term I did not need to know today.
Does anyone in the world know an attractive Scottish woman is the question for this morning. If you know the answer to that, then we'll let you get a free copy of Rich's book.
There
it's
was
one.
There was one. I know she was Welsh.
Yeah, there we go. Sorry, Ben. That's already out. Let's go to Rich Mulholland and speak to him about what he has on his mind this Monday morning. Is he on Skype or on the phone? Skype. All right, let's go to it. Here he is. Good morning, Rich Mulholland. How are you, sir?
Hello, Jimmy. Top of the morning to you.
Oh, nice to hear from you.
Aye, aye.
All right, what's going on, man?
Okay, so first of all, SAA, I've just got to chime in on this. The SAA thing, don't you wish that we could separate it out, that they have one set of rules and books and fine? I can understand to some degree we have to have a national carrier.
Sure.
I find it completely unentrepreneurial that we're bailing them out at a domestic level. So internationally, to have our flag represented in other airports around the world, to some degree, I can understand. Mm-hmm. What kills me is how every time they do something badly, they get bailed out by government, which puts pressure on the other entrepreneurial airlines actually doing their job.
Right.
I feel like domestically, if they're not working, they should go.
Yeah, I don't understand how it can be losing money, though. I mean, I know running an airline, you've got very tight margins. There's a lot going on. So you occasionally might run into, let's say, 10 million rands debt, 100 million rands debt. But 6 billion? You have to be so derelict of duty. You have to be so lost. It boggles my mind. It really does.
Well, there's that joke. That guy, the nemesis, that basically kicked off the airline that ended up leading to Virgin Atlantic. And he always said he was a billionaire. And he said, how'd you become a millionaire? And he said, start with $1 billion and then begin an airline. So I do believe to some degree it's supposed to be a bit of a hemorrhaging industry. All right. I think the capital expenditure is so high.
Yeah, I would imagine so. But I do know that SAA also employs way more people than it has to. And that it's formed, it's become some kind of sheltered employment for friends of government officials.
And I guess there is a way to do it properly. Have you ever listened to the How I Built This podcast by NPR?
Yes.
And they interviewed Herb Kelleher, the founder of Southwest Airlines. Mm-hmm. And from when they got profitable, they've never not been profitable. He said that they've had years where they've done worse. but they've made money every year. Like, it is possible. He just doesn't buy into the bullshit excuse that you can't make money.
Now, what's on your mind this morning?
Right. So a few years ago, we coached a bunch of speakers for TED. And in 2011, we went over there and we trained them. And one of the ladies I worked with was a lady by the name of Candy Chang. Mm-hmm. And she did this TED talk called Before I Die. And she basically went around the world painting these like chalkboard walls that just said, before I die. And then there was a space. And people would walk up to the walls and just say, you know, I want to tell so-and-so I love them, or I want to do this, or want to do that. And it was a really cool initiative. The TED Talk has been seen millions and millions of times. And it made me think of something that happened to me this year. I went to, or at least last December, I went to this leadership academy with EO in Washington, D.C. And I met this guy there. His name is Warren Rustan. He's a highly achieved guy. And what he does is he has a list of 100 goals he wants to achieve before he dies. And at the time of the writing, he passed around his sheet, and it was written when he was like 19 years old. There was 90 of them had checks on them. There was a bunch of them that were like works in progress. And he reckoned there were 4 of them that were off the table altogether because he'd missed his window.
Okay.
And I thought it was quite remarkable, first of all, that he had so much intention. Anyway, we were supposed to be working on these things, and it was all fantastic. And last week, I had a kind of update call with a small cohort from this leadership academy. Mm-hmm. And some of the guys had written out their 100, and some had done, you know, 50 or 60. And I'd only done 15. I'd performed the worst. The one other guy had done none. And I figured when it was amazing to me was the guys who'd already written out the 100. One of the guys who'd written out 100 had already marked off 10. Of which, so he was already closer to hitting off his goals. I'd only written down 15 and I'd done none. And I figured that this was a bit of a problem. Yeah. So this weekend I sat there and I started trying to add to the list. And I started trying to work through and I started researching how much time I had left. And it turns out not as much time as I would have hoped.
Yeah.
Like if you can't go 6 months later from writing something down and not having done anything. And so I guess this is kind of where I'm landing at the moment, where I shat myself, is that we all talk about having a bucket list, but we don't actually have one. If you talk about, oh, that's on my bucket list, show me the bloody list. If you can't pull out a piece of paper somewhere and show me the list, I don't believe it will happen. And I think that we need to actually sit down there and even start with the top 10. But people actually need to write down a list of things they want to do before I die. You know, what was amazing for me is just thinking about it. So now I'm only up to about 30-odd things on the list so far. But just spending time thinking about what would I want to do made me realize, well, shit, you know, some of these things are quite difficult. There's some of them I have to start doing now. Procrastination isn't always an option. And in fact, I don't know if you, do you know Wait But Why, the blog?
No.
It's written by a guy called Tim Urban.
Yeah.
It is probably – you will have – if you have a look at the website, you'll have seen it before. I reckon he's probably the smartest human alive today. I think everything he writes, he'll write a blog post on something and it will become part of the general psyche within 2 or 3 months.
Give us his name again.
Tim Urban, T-I-M,
all right,
space Urban.
All right, got you.
And the blog is called Wait But Why. And he did a TED talk on procrastination he spoke about the procrastination monkey, about why we put stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, he created a poster. And it's basically a poster of 90 years in weeks. And he said every week you've got to just go and mark off one more week. And it's basically to show you that's one more week where you've achieved nothing.
Oh, my God.
Where you've progressed your life nothing.
Oh, my God. I think a lot of people would be very depressed doing that every day. Oh
right. And and that's what he said. He said you've got to actually have this intention.
All right.
If you know there's a deadline, you've got to look at it.
So, Rich, I've got a list. I've had this list for the last 12 years, okay, and I've made progress in some of them, so I take them off the list when I've done them. I don't keep them there, so I don't look at achievements. I'm looking at things I still need to do. Mine is about 35 things long, and it's everything from buy a huge bucket of Lego and build scale models of the buildings that I've designed, right through to collecting rare books, going to Rome, buying a decent knife for my kitchen. It's the stupidest little things and it's big things.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So some of these I've achieved because they're very easy. How hard is it to go and buy a decent chef's knife, for example? So it's really just a question. You save up, you go out, you buy it, and then that one's off the list. But I'm looking at this list of 35 things, and I really want all of this to happen. Some of them are fairly innocuous, as I said, but I feel like I can do all of this in the next 10 years. Is that what you're talking about? You have to draw a deadline? You have to say this needs to happen now?
Well, I mean, yes. It's not about all of them there, though. I mean, one of my ones in my list is grow old with jazz. The intention is to not mess this up, right? So it's not like all the list, but one of them is to I've also got the kind of visit Tristan da Cunha, ride a lap at the Isle of Man TT. I mean, yeah. They're all things that are technically positive, possible.
Yeah.
But I think just the idea that they're written down, that there has to be a plan for them, you got to start figuring shit out.
Right.
You actually got to start work out what's going on. One of the ones is at one stage have a visible six pack. I mean, fuck, man.
I'd like that.
I'd like that, but I have to make a lot of sacrifices to get it. And at what point would I do that? And then you start realizing, well, hold on a sec, some of the other goals may align with that. And why not make smashing these three or four goals all coincide with each other, or make the one a reward goal for some of the other achievements? So I'm not allowed to spend summer in Iceland until such time as I've got the visible six-pack. I mean, there's so many things you can do. One of them is to spend a month in Scotland. Another is to write a work of fiction. What happens if those two things were then to decide were to coincide and say spend a month in Scotland writing but a work of fiction? But if we don't have them, we're not doing anything. You know, if you don't know where you're going, it's almost guaranteed you won't get there. And that's the problem, is most people don't know where they're going. Even people with purpose don't have intention. And the challenge is to create intention. It's totally okay to have a list of things and then to decide later, actually, I don't really want to go there. But you need to start off with something. So you need to start the list. And I guess that's something I think people should be thinking about doing this week, is even as they're driving their cars right now, as they're sitting at the desk or whatever, is what are those things? Even if you just scribble them down, put them somewhere. And make sure, you know, you can go to a website called followup.cc. Okay?
Yeah.
And what you can do is you can write yourself an email. And you can say, every 6 months, email me this back. And all it will do is it's an amazing, by the way, as a productivity tool, followup.cc is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to use it. But one of the little smaller sides with it is that you can send yourself an email every 6 months. And every 6 months, that list of 35 things that you've created for yourself will arrive in your inbox. And you can just scroll through and see, in this half a year, did I achieve anything on my list? And if you haven't, fix that shit.
I love this. I think everybody's going to get to work on at least 10 things on their list that they want to achieve. Otherwise, you're just existing, right?
Coasting.
You're not living. Yeah. You're just existing.
You're doing an SAA.
Yeah.
Because if you're not gaining, you're losing, right?
Correct. So at least achieve one of these things as often as you can. And some of them you can knock off pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
All right.
Some of them, the last thing would be that some of them, just by writing them down, I want to post mine all online, because I'm convinced there's a lot of them that somebody could just say, hey, man, I know those guys. I could totally make that happen for you.
Right.
And so sometimes just putting it out there, what you think is difficult, doesn't have to be.
I totally agree. And you'll be surprised once you start putting it out there how much comes towards you in terms of making it happen and making it possible.
Right.
All right, Rich, I love it. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome.
Have a great week.
There we go. Rich Mulholland, everybody. A little bit of a wake up, a reality check on a Monday. We do this with Rich every Monday, and you can catch up on all the ones that we've done previously because they are evergreen. You got a list of things? People say they've got their bucket list, but it's some nonsense in their head that they've never actually written down. Well, I have. I've got some very, very easy things on here that I could knock off in the next 10 days if I tried.
But I think, you know, the act of just writing it down as well, you know, we have so many of these thoughts and ideas in our heads, but actually when you write it down,
well,
you see it practically.
I mean, I'm looking at some of these.
To make it happen.
Here's one that'll never happen, but it's on my list. Write a song. I want to be able to write a song.
Gareth, you always say this, don't you?
I know. I would love to write a song. I just don't have the talent at all. I'm going to sit with somebody one day. And I thought I'd written a song the other day. I had a tune in my head, and I recorded it. And It's gone missing. I can't find it anywhere. But I thought I had a song. For a moment there, I was almost somewhere.
I don't think that's a never.
I'd give it to someone and say, here, improve this for me, so that it wouldn't sound stupid. And I'd be so embarrassed if my song was crap.
But that's totally doable.
Well, and then another thing I want to do is pay for other people's meals once a week. Just go somewhere, see someone who's sitting eating a meal, or they're buying something at the shop, pay for it without them knowing, and they never find out it was you.
Mm.
Do that every week. You don't need to be rich to do that.
Mm-mm.
I don't just have kids.
To be selfless.
No, I don't have kids. It would be paying for a kid's meal if I had a kid. You just do that, and they don't know that it's you who paid for it. There's so many cool things. I just want to have like new bedding, new fresh linen on my bed every 2 years. Is that too much to ask? Even every year?
Oh,
right? I think that's doable.
Yeah.
You don't sleep on the same shitty bedding for like year upon year upon year until it's ugly and starting to fade and looking terrible. And those are things that you could do. Fly a helicopter. Mm. It's another thing on my list.
I actually need to write these down.
You've got to write them down. Yeah, of course. I've had this list since I was a kid. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, it's still getting a dog. There's certain sporting events that I still want to go do. The golfing trip across America, that's a big one. It's like I don't have a lot of things I want to do, but the things I do want to do are kind of fundamental. So if I've got those things happening, then I know the rest of my life is great.
And you, Mubs? You got lists?
I want to choreograph a music video.
Really?
Nice.
Really?
Well, I can't dance.
Yeah.
But I think that I can choreograph.
But you want some shirtless men to do it for you?
No, not even.
Okay.
That would be amazing.
That's also doable, though.
We can get some easy to get you involved.
Yeah, look, I've just got to make the right connections.
That would be amazing.
And you are already.
You really are. Like Hi Rob said in Amsterdam last week, you are very mysterious. That you've harbored this desire to choreograph a music video from us for such a long time. That's a beautiful goal. What else?
Put it on.
Well, I mean, I still want to do the thing where I take a year or two off and I travel the world spending a month in a different country each time. That has to happen like in the next 2 years, though.
Make it happen.
Yeah, it's almost like being disciplined enough to say, this is what I want to do and this is the time frame. Because without that time frame, like Rich said, everyone just has a lovely dream. But you have to have that time frame. All right. It's like I have to go across America while I'm still young and fit. I can't be 50 years old to do that. Imagine how lame that would be.
Well, golf at least is one of those things, Ben, that you can be 50 years old.
Yeah, but not the kind of golf I like to play. I want to grip it and rip it. I don't want to be off the senior tees with a push cart.
Oh, yes. Grip it and rip it.
That's what I'm about.
I'll start using that in inappropriate context.
All right. We'll come back in a moment or two, take your ideas on this too. I'm sure that there are lots of very, very cool lists out there. I'd like to – let's compare notes, huh? How about it? I'd like to hear what's on your list. Top of my bucket list is to start my bucket list, says someone on WhatsApp. Come on, get going there, you procrastinator. All right, when you've got your list or you've got some ideas, then either WhatsApp us 0797482090. You can call us 0861555189. Or if you like, you can also Skype us, Cliff Central, one word. I'd like to hear from you, see what you have to say. Let's get going. Come on, get your morning off to a good start. It's Monday. CliffCentral.com. I had a dream. We were sipping whiskey neat. CliffCentral.com.